Hello, and welcome to One World, One Health, with the latest ideas to improve the health of our planet and its people. I'm Maggie Fox. Planet Earth faces many challenges: pollution, climate change, and new and re-emerging infectious diseases. This podcast is brought to you by the One Health Trust, with bite-sized insights into ways to help. In this episode, we're chatting with Dr. Abby Vanek of the Center for Biodiversity and Conservation at the Ashoka Trust for Research in Ecology and the Environment, or ATRI, in Bangalore, India. Abby studies animals, their movements, and their diseases. One of these diseases is rabies, the most deadly virus there is. Rabies is virtually 100% fatal in people, and the only reliable treatment is to vaccinate a victim before symptoms start showing. Rabies kills just under 60,000 people a year globally. Abby, thanks so much for joining us.
My pleasure to be with you this evening.
Can you tell us a little bit more about rabies? Who are most of the victims?
As you mentioned, rabies is 100% fatal. And unfortunately, most of the victims of rabies are either children or people who come from poorer communities or people who live in rural areas. And, you know, you mentioned that 60,000 people die of rabies every year, and a third of that number comes from India. So India has a dubious distinction of being the world's rabies capital. So about 20,000 people die of rabies in India every year.
Why is that?
The most common cause of rabies is due to a dog bite. And there's a lot of dogs in India. You know, unlike in the UK or other places in the global north, dogs are not, you know, not the well taken care of pets that you would normally associate with. Instead, most of the dogs you see in India are free roaming. They're on the streets. And even if they are sometimes owned or semi-owned, they don't necessarily receive a vaccination for rabies. And therefore, dogs can get rabies. They're the biggest carrier of rabies in India. And obviously, if an animal is rabid, then it can bite people, and the bite of the animal transmits rabies. Most victims, you know, either the children or, like I said, they're living in villages who may not be able to get a vaccine on time, or they may not get a vaccine due to other reasons. So this is why India is, you know, has the most number of rabies cases.
What got you interested in rabies in the first place?
So I'm an ecologist, and when I started my PhD way back in 2002, 2003, I was doing surveys for trying to see the mesocarnivore community, so the small carnivores in the Indian landscape. And as I was putting out my camera traps there, I realized that domestic dogs were the most common carnivore I would see at the camera traps. So that got me interested in trying to understand the role of dogs as part of that ecosystem. And then I wanted to see what impact they would also have on carnivores in terms of disease transfer. And of course, rabies is an important disease for wildlife as well. But during my PhD, while I was testing some of these dogs, we were going from village to test dogs. I saw a couple of young kids bringing a dog with them, and one of those dogs tested positive for rabies, and it looked perfectly normal. You know, that sort of was a real eye-opener. And so when I came back to India many years later after my PhD, and I wanted to understand this a little bit more, a colleague of mine, Anirudh Belsare, and I started thinking about rabies from the perspective of public health as well. And so we started trying to understand the ecology of rabies and the ecology of domestic dogs, which as I mentioned are the most important carrier of rabies in India.
And that's very telling when you said sometimes the dogs look normal, because I think people have this idea that if a dog is rabid, it's going to be running around, foaming at the mouth, acting weird, and all people have to do is stay away from it. But that's not necessarily the case, is it?
Oh, no, not at all. So in the last few years now, since 2016, since I started studying rabies in seriousness, I partnered up with a couple of organizations, one in particular, which is in the city of Pune in Western India. There's an organization called Rescue Charitable Trust, which runs an animal hospital and picks up sick or injured animals from the road. So, you know, when we started testing those animals, we found that a lot of animals that didn't necessarily show these classic signs of rabies still turned out to be rabid. And It was a huge, you know, the kinds of clinical signs that they showed were really varied. And you would not necessarily associate some of those signs with rabid animals. So it's what you'd see on the street and, you know, this classical image, as you mentioned, of this animal foaming at the mouth is a small percentage of the total number of cases that we saw. Many of them looked completely normal otherwise. And, you know, like, for example, a puppy that was just nippy. You know, pups nip all the time, but this one turned out to be rabid. Domestic, you know, in fact, own dogs, some of them had things like lockjaw, which just would, you know, just the tongue hanging out all the time, saliva dripping, they would turn out to be rabid. And, you know, these are people's, even their own pets sometimes, which they were, you know, they would bring in their arms to the veterinarian or to the clinic, and these would turn out to be rabid. And we had to, you know, unfortunately inform the owners of this. So it can be quite difficult to tell a rabid animal on the street if you don't know what you're looking for.
And that's how people could get exposed. They don't even know an animal, and other animals besides dogs can get rabies, right? My understanding is most mammals can carry rabies.
Yes, certainly. Most mammals can get infected by rabies. They may not necessarily transmit rabies further up because it requires, like, for example, humans get rabies, but then humans play no further role in transmitting rabies.
Zombie movies aside.
Sorry?
Zombie movies aside.
Zombie movies, in fact, zombie movies, rabies is the inspiration for most zombie movies. And there's a really interesting book called Rabid, which sort of details the history of rabies in the world. And it calls it a diabolical disease because a lot of myths are associated with rabies. The book hypothesizes that even Dracula is probably associated with rabies. But the broader, the general point I was trying to make was that, you know, if people get, you know, they might get a bite or a scratch even from a potentially rabid dog that they think is not rabid, and they might just ignore it and, you know, just let it go. And, you know, a month later, sometimes two, sometimes even 6 months later, they might suddenly develop the symptoms of rabies, and they might not even remember that they had this little nip by some puppy on the street or by a dog. And in many cases, even in humans, the signs of rabies can differ. So people may not even suspect that this person died of rabies. So this is why rabies continues to be underreported in India as well.
And that's one of the things that makes it so scary, right? You can get exposed. And I know in other parts of the world, it's maybe a bat bite that people might not notice either because they have very sharp little teeth that you don't necessarily feel. And months later, start showing symptoms. Nobody even suspects it's rabies. And by then it's too late.
That's exactly right. And India doesn't have bat rabies, at least not that we know of. Most of the time it's dogs, and it's more than 95%. But occasionally you do have wild carnivores get rabies as well. For example, wolves, jackals, foxes, mongooses, civets, they could all, cats can get rabies. So any of these animals could also get rabies. And the classical sort of rabid wolf syndrome is when, you know, of a wolf or a jackal goes on this massive biting spree and bites 20, 30 people, attacks livestock, attacks dogs. And then that's when it hits the headlines. But when this happens with a dog, it's sort of, you know, just taken to be, people just shrug their shoulders and say, oh yeah, it was a mad dog, we killed it, it's done. We've also had reports, so as part of our project, we also had reports of cows and bulls getting rabid. And that can be pretty dangerous, not from the bite, but the fact that they can be pretty violent as well. And that's an unfortunate loss of an animal to the farmer.
And even though people don't necessarily transmit rabies, they play a role in helping facilitate the spread, right? Can you talk to us a little bit about how human behavior can affect the spread of rabies?
You know, there's sort of a direct method of this and somewhat of an indirect method. The direct one is when people move their dogs around. So if the people are traveling from country to country, and if they go somewhere which doesn't have good quarantine facilities, or doesn't have good quarantine laws, then potentially you could bring in a rabid animal into the country and, you know, introduce rabies there, which is, in fact, what happened in, you know, when the British were in India. A lot of their soldiers were bringing back dogs from India to the British Isles, and rabies sort of was difficult to eliminate there because of that. So then they started setting up these pasture institutes all over the place in India to sort of, well, one, to treat their own soldiers who were getting exposed, but and then they put in stricter rules about bringing dogs dogs into the United Kingdom. But the other sort of method by which people can contribute to the persistence of rabies in landscapes is ironically through animal welfare movements or animal rights movements. In India especially, there's a huge sort of conflation of animal rights and disease control. The rules and the laws in India require dogs to be on the streets, sort of to be unowned. You're not allowed to take a dog off the street and put it in a shelter, for instance. Even more bizarrely, you're not allowed to euthanize a rabid dog. The rules say that you're just supposed to isolate it and allow it to die a natural death. Now, this is unprecedented. No other country in the world does this. India is the only country to have this kind of a legislation. But, you know, hopefully we can change it soon. But yeah, human behavior in terms of, you know, moving dogs around, not being careful about vaccinating dogs, not taking vaccination or the health of dogs seriously enough can certainly contribute to the spread of rabies. And that's why a One Health perspective is very important to rabies control. Controlling a zoonotic disease like rabies then means that instead of focusing on humans, which are a dead end host, let's focus on the animal that transmits rabies. So if you manage to keep dogs healthy, we'll also make sure that humans are healthy. That is, they don't get rabies. And that works because one of the most effective ways of controlling rabies is to vaccinate your own dogs. If you have dogs, vaccinate them. You know, it works in most parts of the world. The problem comes when you have very large populations of unowned dogs that are not easily accessible, or you can't vaccinate all of them just because there are too many of them. So that's when the problems start coming in. You know, for example, India may have something like between 60 to 80 million dogs on the streets. You know, vaccinating that many dogs is going to be a gargantuan task. So we need to rethink how we're going to get a handle on rabies in countries like India.
So how can the One Health approach be used to help control this spread?
So what we're trying to show is that, you know, using the One Health approach, we want to emphasize again that having healthy dogs is the most cost-effective way of preventing rabies. And having healthy dogs means to take fuller responsibility for them, not just let them be roaming around in such large numbers on the streets, or, you know, carelessly feeding them so that the population numbers keep increasing. So this is where the One Health concept or One Health framework will come in. But let's also use science better. Let's also try and find ways of, so what we are trying to understand is where, you know, what are the dynamics of rabies in dog populations. So one of our hypotheses is that rabies emerges in very high density dog populations in the city and then spills over to the neighboring rural areas. So now if you can find a way of creating sort of a barrier for movement of rabid dogs or a barrier for the movement of rabies itself by sort of, you know, vaccinating around cities, then you could potentially disrupt the emergence of rabies from cities to rural areas. Now remember, rural areas is where most human victims are and where they may not necessarily have access to vaccines immediately, or they may not be, you know, a lot of poor people may not be able to afford to take a day off, or actually 3 or 4 days off, to go and get the full course of vaccines. So it's important for us to try and find ways of controlling rabies in rural areas, because most people in cities have easy access to vaccines if they do get exposed to a dog bite.
And that's if they know they've been exposed to the bite of a rabid dog.
We recommend that if any exposure you've had, you should go and do the first aid, go and make sure the wound is fully washed for 15 minutes with soap and running water, and then immediately try and get yourself to a hospital that'll give you your vaccine. It doesn't matter what kind of exposure you think it is. Even if it's a scratch, it's still important to get vaccinated, because people can get rabies from scratches as well, especially if an animal has been licking its paws or something like that. So the saliva basically is where rabies, the rabies virus is in, and you know that saliva could get into the wound through a scratch as well. So,
Abby, thanks so much for spending some time with us.
It's been my pleasure talking to you. Thank you.
Listeners can share this podcast, which is brought to you by the One Health Trust, by email, Twitter, or your favorite social media platform. And let us know what else you'd like to hear about at OWOH, that's OWOH, at onehealthtrust.org. Thanks for listening.
Thank you for listening to One World, One Health, brought to you by the One Health Trust. I'm Ramanan Lakshminarayan, founder and president of the One Health Trust. You can subscribe to One World, One Health on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Follow us on social media at One Health Trust, one word, for updates on One World, One Health and the latest in research on One Health issues like drug resistance, disease spillovers, and the social determinants of health. Finally, please do consider donating to the One Health Trust to support this podcast and other initiatives and research that help us promote health and well-being worldwide. Until next time.